Hey, can everybody hear me okay? Don't mind, I'm out standing at the podium. I like to pace and I like to point at things, which is really hard to do when you can't see the screen. So my name is Drew Levine. I write the documentation for IAC Systems, which is the corporate sponsor of the PCBSD and the FreeNAS projects. And today I'm going to talk about ZFS 101. So what we've found over the years as we've been developing PCBSD and FreeNAS is people really like the products. But a lot of people are not familiar with all of the stuff you can get out of ZFS, and that's where we usually get the most questions. And ZFS is sort of one of those crown jewels in open source that was designed to give you really cool features. And a lot of people don't know what they're missing out on if they're not using ZFS. So what I'm trying to do from a layman's perspective is to talk about the features, just so you have sort of an overview. And then from there, show how easy it is to configure and use those using both PCBSD and FreeNAS. So that's sort of the scope of today's topic. I'm not going to go in at a really technical level. Those of you who are really interested in technical details, you really want to read the original Solaris documents that talk about the design from a technical view, how ZFS is. But usually as administrators and as end users, we just sort of, I don't really understand all of that. I just want to know what I can do with something. And that's more what this talk is generated for. But there is lots of technical documentation out on the internet for those that do want to learn more about ZFS. So ZFS 101, so did you know that ZFS is cool? And hopefully by the end of this presentation you will. And hopefully you'll think, well, gee, maybe I should take a crack at using that. It was so cool. And are these going to work now? No, I'll have to do it this way. Okay. So the basic outline, basically I'm just going to go through some of the features. As we get to features, I'll show screenshots of how you can actually configure that in both FreeNAS and PCBSD. For those of you who didn't make it to the BSD booth today or walked by it and didn't know you could grab DVDs, we still have DVDs of both. So if you do want to try it out, I'll bring it home with you. The features that I'm talking about today, I don't know how much you guys know about ZFS, but was originally designed at Sun. Sun did get bought by Oracle, and some of the features that went with ZFS to Oracle are not open source. That doesn't mean that ZFS died when Sun died. There has been a lot of development since the last open source version. And most of the major players in open source who use ZFS have been working together and they've been doing co-development. So if you're using something like Nixenta or Lumos or OpenSolaris or FreeBSD, you're using the same ZFS code base. The most recent of features that went into ZFS were known as feature flags. And sometimes you'll see the term ZFS version 5000. So the last open source version that came out of Solaris was version 28. So there's a huge jump from 28 to 5000. They did that on purpose. It wasn't that they put in that many new features. They just really wanted to differentiate. This is where Solaris ended. This is where open source development continued. So all of the features we're talking about today assume you're using the most recent version of ZFS. So what is ZFS? It is a file system. It actually stands for the Zettabyte file system. It was designed from scratch. So it was a totally new file system. And they did have some design goals in mind when they were creating ZFS. One is they wanted to make sure they weren't going to run out of space for a while. So it is a 128-bit file system, which actually goes into 16 exabytes. So storage for a while, yeah, at least the next 10 years. We'll see how hardware goes. One of the things they wanted to do was to create a copy-on-write file system, which is different than how most file systems write to disk. So in copy-on-write, when you modify a file, you do not touch the original disk blocks. Instead, you write the new version of the file elsewhere. And this actually allows you to do some interesting things, which we're going to talk about. And there's not that many copy-on-write file systems out there. It is both a file system and a logical volume manager. So one of the design goals was to overcome some of the hardware limitations of hardware RAID. So they wanted to provide a file system which provide reliable redundancy without data loss. So that's something that's built into the design of the file system. And we'll talk a little bit about that. When you first start using ZFS, if you've used Unix file systems before, you have to do a bit of a mind meld because it's totally different when you lay out your disks. So we're used to Unix file systems. You have to think ahead of time, how big is root going to be, how big is USR, how big is var, and you have to have that thought out ahead of time because you can't change it once you've formatted your disks. ZFS doesn't do that. So you, when you are setting up ZFS, you're setting something that's called a pool, and that pool is designed to grow over time as you need to increase capacity. So you don't go in and set up a root and a USR and a var. So you just create a pool, and then you use it from there. So that takes a while to wrap your head around. And once you start working with ZFS, you realize there's a lot of flexibility of being able to change my design as my data needs change. And that's something that ZFS allows you to do. It's one thing to say that you can increase disk capacity, but you don't want to do that stupidly. You want to actually do this with a design. So I mentioned here that it does require pre-planning, and again, we'll talk a little bit about that. So you do want to think ahead of time, what sort of capacity am I thinking of in the future? But ZFS will allow you to do that. So let's take a closer look at what a pool is. So think of the pool basically as your root. It's your parent volume. And we're so used to in Unix land to think of you got your root file system, and then you have other file systems that hang off of it. ZFS is very different. So we feed this to a pool, but then we have a lot of flexibility of what we do, how we divide up that pool afterwards. So just basically think of it as a collection of disks, because that's basically what it is. ZFS handles everything else for you. When you are setting up your pool, let's pretend I have lots of hardware, lots of money, I got 40 disks. It would be stupid for me to throw 40 disks into a pool, especially if they were large capacity disks. Because one of the things you want to do is you want to optimize your performance. And when you're dealing with redundancy, you're writing parity information. So you want to be able, you don't want to fight the parity algorithm. You want to actually optimize it. And there are certain numbers of disks for different levels of redundancy. So that's something you're supposed to know ahead of time. And I have some screens on that. The other thing, especially if you're dealing with large disks, you have to think, well, if I'm creating a redundant array of disks, at some point, disks are going to start to fail, and I'm going to have to pull them and replace them. They're going to have to go through a rebuild process, which is called resilvering, and you don't want to resilver a 4D drive array. So you're really thinking about your resilvering time, and you're thinking about your performance. So we use a term called a VDEV. And there are recommendations of how many disks to put in per VDEV, depending upon your level of redundancy. Then as you need more capacity, you just add VDEVs. So for example, if I decide that I need a RAID Z2 of 6 disks, and I'll show you what a RAID Z2 is, I would know in the future that I would be adding 6 disks at a time. And then it would strike those, and the pool would continue to move along. So it's sort of the concept of a pool and a VDEV. We then get into our redundancy levels. So redundancy in ZFS is called RAID Z. We are now up to 3 redundancy levels. And the number that comes after the Z tells you how many disks you can lose per VDEV. So if I have a RAID Z1 VDEV, I can lose 1 disk without losing my data. A RAID Z2, I can lose 2 disks. One of the reasons why when you're dealing with multiple disks, you want to really stripe your VDEVs, because the number of disks you lose is per VDEV. So if I have VDEVs of 5 disks each in a RAID Z2, I can actually lose 2 disks per 5 disk block that I haven't lost my data. So in theory, I could lose 4 disks and still have not lost anything. So that's why you're designing ahead of time how you're putting this together. One of the other design goals with ZFS was that it should work on commodity hardware, so you don't have to go out and buy expensive hardware RAID controllers. ZFS will install on a RAID controller, but it's recommended that you put it in JBOD mode. ZFS is happy when it has full control of your disks. So if we take a look at a RAID Z1, because it's a number 1, you can lose 1 disk, but that's per VDEV. In all of the versions of RAID Z, parity blocks are always distributed across all your blocks. So you never have a disk which is devoted to parity, so you don't have a single point of failure. The pool itself, though, in a RAID Z1, it really depends upon how important your data is. So if you are resilvering because you've replaced a disk and a second disk dies in that VDEV, you've lost your pool. So if redundancy is very important for you, usually RAID Z1 isn't the one you're using. Now, if you're a home user or a very small office and, you know, it's not really critical data, RAID Z1 is fine. And it does give you decent redundancy and good performance. You'll notice here we have the number of disks for a RAID Z1. So it's optimized to use 3, 5, or 9 disks at a time in your VDEV. Next slide is for the RAID Z2. So again, you can lose 2 disks per VDEV, and this one is optimized for 4, 6, or 10 disks. And with a RAID Z3, this one is optimized for 5, 7, or 11. Okay. So those are our RAID levels. When we get into, well, how do I actually do this on products? In FreeNAS, I'm looking at the latest version, yes?
If you're using that last one, which yes. was the RAID 3 disk failure,
yes.
okay, and you're using 5 disks, say you have 5 2-terabyte disks.
Correct.
For 10 terabytes of data.
Correct.
What is your usable space on those 5 disks?
It depends upon which operating system you're using and if it also puts swap on it. But you are going to, and I'm terrible with math, so I've actually gotten lazy with FreeNAS because in our new volume manager, it does the capacity calculation for you. And what we've found is, one of the reasons why we put it into the volume manager is a very popular question was, I thought I was going to get 200 megs more capacity. What happened here? And usually it's a manufacturer. That's when you start getting into, again, I'm terrible with math. The different calculations. Yeah, the K. People were getting mixed up with that.
Yeah, 1,000 versus the 10.
Exactly, yeah. So again, I've gotten lazy. I let it do the math for me. Yes?
Yeah. Is it possible to add hot spares?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. And I'll show that in another screen. So one of the things we did with the 9.1 series of the volume manager is we looked at all the questions that we were getting from 8X users. We tried to make the volume manager as easy as possible. We also tried to make it so that users wouldn't shoot themselves in the foot, because we know that nobody reads documentation until they've screwed something up. So you had people making RAID Z2s using a non-optimal number of disks and feeding 30 disks at a time and saying, how come this is crap? It's not working well. So we tried to put that logic into the volume manager. So the volume manager will show you how many disks you have and their sizes. And it has a little slider here. And this is a part people haven't discovered yet, even though there's a little pop-up that says drag this and select your disks. But basically, you select the amount of disks that you have. And over here, it will do the space calculation for you. And it will automatically select the best RAID Z for the number of disks that you selected. If you go and select 20 disks, which isn't going to be optimal for anything, this whole area turns red and says this is a non-optimal configuration. And it has a hyperlink to our documentation that shows you these are the number of disks you should be picking. So we tried to make that as simple as possible. We still get users who say, it won't let me do this. Well, it will, but it's going to complain. And if you want to do it, go for it. But we've tried to make this as easy as possible. I'll show this button in another slide where it allows you to add extra stuff. So I'm going to talk about those. So that's how we do it in FreeNAS. So we have a nice little ZFS volume manager. In PCBSD, so FreeNAS is an embedded operating system, so all of this happens post-install. PCBSD, whether you're doing the desktop or a server, you set up your pool during installation. And it will allow you to go in and decide, is this going to be a single disk install, which is very popular on desktop systems. And if you have extra disks, you can also go and set up your RAID Zs. So this one I just did in the virtual box. I made a bunch of virtual disks. If I was to check this box, I could decide, do I want to do a mirror, or I could choose my RAID Z levels. Again, we try to prevent users from shooting themselves in the foot. So if I had selected a RAID Z1 and I didn't have enough disks to do that, it wouldn't let me select it. It won't even show in the drop-down. If I select a non-optimal number of disks, a little message will say this RAID Z is optimized for how many disks, whatever your three values are. So again, we're trying to make it easy for users. So that's how we do it in PCBSD. So that's our pool. We have a couple of other things that start getting into optimizing a system, especially if you have a machine that's under heavy use. So ZFS has something called the ZIL, or the ZFS Intent Log. And it's basically a journal, sort of like a file system journal, and its job is to manage your writes. One of the things that you can do on a really busy system with a lot of writes is you can create a secondary log device known as a SLOG. Typically, you're going to put it on a high-performance SSD. You can use a disk, but typically it's an SSD. And we get users who do this all the time and said it made absolutely no difference in performance. What went wrong? It's important to understand that your write log, you increase performance for synchronous writes. But if your application is doing asynchronous writes, it's not going to help at all. We see this typically on FreeNAS systems because people are building, you know, bigger storage appliances, so they want to get all the performance they can. We actually have a tool, ZFS Stat, which will monitor your ZIL and make a recommendation on whether an SSD would help your workload. So it's really workload specific depending upon the type of writes that you have. One of the problems that we used to have in earlier versions of ZFS is if you did make an S-log and that device died, you lost your pool unless you had mirrored that device. This is something that has not happened for a couple of years now. That was the really old version, version 15, I believe. So if you're using the 8 or the 9 series, you're fine. You're not going to have that problem. But if you find a really old version of ZFS and decide to play with it, that's something to be aware of. We also have something called the ARC. So the ZIL deals with your reads. The ARC is basically your read cache. And this is something that builds up over time. as the system is used and it starts to read. So we all know that something that is read from RAM will always be much quicker than something that we had to go to disk for to get the read. So you want your ARC cache to populate, and what you'll find is if reads tend to be for the same stuff, it's probably going to work quite well, but it's when you start getting random reads that you may benefit from a larger ARC because it can hold more stuff. So FreeNAS, again, it's usually FreeNAS users that care about this sort of thing. We actually, in TOP, have added the ability to read ARC stats. And we also have a couple of tools that we ported to Python that basically gives you every ARC stack there is out there. And in our documentation, it gives you hints on how to understand that output, because you're going to get like 40 pages of output. You can go and create something called an L2 ARC, which is basically your layer 2 ARC. So this is similar to creating an S-log. You're actually creating another ARC. And again, you usually put it on something high performance, like an SSD. And again, a lot of users say, well, I'll just throw it on an L2 ARC, performance will be wonderful, and then they find out the system is slower than it used to be. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is the best cure for anything is to throw more RAM at it, because you can never have too much RAM. And if the system is limited in RAM to begin with, having an L2 ARC will bog the system down. So you really want to have as much RAM as possible before you start to L2 ARC. And this, over time, will populate as well. So basically gives you a much bigger read cache. How do we do this from a GUI? Where are we here? So again, we don't have this ability in PCBSD yet, because usually not desktop users care about these things. And FreeNAS we do. So once you have a volume, if you go in and select that volume's name, and you go down here, you can opt to create another ZIL or another L2 ARC or to create a spare. I was just cheating and getting a screenshot in VirtualBox, but typically I'd be selecting an SSD for this purpose. If I had two SSDs, I could select both that would automatically mirror them for me. So very easy to do from the GUI. Then we get into data sets. So now that I have this wonderful great big pool and I'm optimizing my reads and my writes, what do I do with it? And that's usually, it's going to be very specific to what it is that you're trying to accomplish. And data sets are a wonderful way to accomplish it. So a lot of people ask, what is a data set? And it's really hard to get a set definition. One way to look at a data set is it's a folder. It's something that holds information. I can set permissions on it. Another way to look at it is it's almost like a file system, because I can set different properties on it. I can go in and set user quotas, group quotas, disk quotas, things that you usually do at the file system level. So both of those abilities are built into data sets. And one of the new things that we got with the ZFS feature flags in that version 5000 was a compression algorithm called LZ4, which is built in a ZFS. And one of the problems with compression is that it's always you're deciding, do I want performance or do I want compressibility? And usually you are picking one over the other. With LZ4, you get maximum compression at almost real-time speed, and that's built into ZFS. And that's something that you can put on a data set. When you start looking at that, you can start thinking, well, how would I want to, portion up my data? Do I want to create spaces for each user and limit them to a specific size? If so, make a data set for each user and set a quota. Do I want to create data sets for different types of data that I'm storing? Maybe I have a bunch of files that would benefit from compression. Well, put them in an area and put compression on. So you basically, the sky is the limit, and you can just think down and on the fly decide, this would be useful to have a data set that does this. And you just go in and you create it, and it just keeps on perking along. The other different thing about ZFS, I talked about that 16 exabyte size, assuming we could actually make a pool that big. That size can be a pool, it can be a data set, or it could be a file. To ZFS, they're all the same thing. So there's no limit that way. So you can go in and make millions of data sets if you had the capacity to store those. They all have the full space available to them unless you've limited them with a quota. I talked a little bit about properties. I didn't write them all down because there's literally several dozen properties. And the best way to find out what those properties are is to read man ZFS. So if you're on a FreeBSD system, you can do that. If you're not, all FreeBSD man pages are online. And just to give you sort of an idea, you can decide whether the access time on the file is marked or not, whether that data set can be mounted, whether it should be compressed. Copies is really nice. So if you have really important data, you can put that data in a data set and say, make one copy, two copy, three copies. And those copies are disk block copies, and they're going to be spread throughout the pool. So if you're really paranoid, I can't lose this file, and you're worried about a disk block taking it out, you can say how many copies of that file to create, and it does it automatically for you. You can decide, we'll talk a little bit about dedupe. You can set the exec, whether executables are allowed. You can set quotas, either on the data set itself or by user or by group. You can set it read-only. You can set a record size, which is sometimes handy for database applications. You can set reservations. You can do set UID. And that's only about a third of the properties that are available. So lots of cool things you can do with data sets. They're really easy to make. So if I'm on a FreeNAS system, here I already have a pool that I created. I called it Volume 1. I click on Create ZFS data set, give it a name. And right now, we just have the most common properties that we want users to do, again, so they don't shoot themselves in the foot. If you know what you're doing, you just drop down to the shell and you set, it's a one-liner to either set a property or to turn off a property. And this literally takes as long as it takes to type a name and click that button. You have a data set. So really quick to make. If I'm on a PCBSD system, right now we just have it in the installer. Probably sometime next year we'll have a nice GUI for managing data sets. One of the things we've done with PCBSD, because I'm going to talk about how to make smart backups, we create a bunch of data sets for you, and we already have some options. We recommend that PCBSD users don't delete any of the defaults, but they go in and add their own. In PCBSD, whenever you make a user, they get their own data set. And we're going to find that's very useful when you get into backups. So again, it's very easy. You just click an add button, give it a name. There's a list of popular properties. You check them off and you press OK. So very easy to create. Then we get into zVols. So data sets are a really smart way to manage your data. Depending upon what your storage needs are, so we're in FreeNAS again, you can also divide the pool into something called zVols. And these are really a virtual block device. So it's basically to the client that's attaching to the zVol, it is a raw disk on the network. They go in and they format it, and they work with it however they would want to work with it. So typically, we're using this for iSCSI device extents. So as far as the iSCSI client cares about, they see this raw disk on the network, they format it, they store their files there. The advantage of doing this is underneath you have ZFS handling everything. So you still get all the redundancy, and we're going to be talking about snapshots. So you get all the advantages of ZFS, doesn't matter what they formatted the ZBall with. Again, these are really easy to make. So here I've made my pool, I click create ZBall, I give it a name, and I say the size of the disk that I want to make, and I press OK. Now we get into the cool stuff. So that stuff wasn't cool yet. That's just how ZFS works. Yeah?
Does ZBalls take away from the spaces available in the pool?
It depends how you do it. So no space is used until you actually use it. And one of the things you can do with ZBalls is you can do both thin and thick provisioning, depending upon how you set up the ZBall. And I always get them backwards, so refer to the documentation because it will have it correct. Snapshots are what are really cool, and if you've ever worked with snapshots with other file systems, it's totally different in ZFS. Has anyone ever made a UFS snapshot before? I don't know if we got FreeBSD people. So the definition of a snapshot is it is a point in time. So it's basically what did the file system look like at this point in time. If I was to make a snapshot in UFS, it would lock the system for a second to prepare itself, and then it would give it back to me, and then it would take some time to create a snapshot, which would be the size of the disk, regardless of how the disk was being used. So not very efficient, terrible to use for backups, but it is a point in time. Most file systems, that's how they take snapshots. With ZFS, when you take a snapshot, it takes up 0 bytes of space. And ZFS knows what the file system looked like in that point in time. What happens, because that basically takes up no space, your space starts to be used as the data changes between snapshots. But this is a very efficient way to keep track of what the system is doing. So it doesn't cost anything for you to do snapshots every 5 minutes. The functionality that gives you is I can go back in time to any 5 minute period and restore a file from that point in time. And that is huge functionality. One of the things that both FreeNAS and PCBSD support is not only can you automate when the snapshots occur, you can replicate them to another system. So it's basically a redundant backup of a certain point in time. Let's see, so they can be replicated. Oh, the snapshots themselves can be recursive. That's a choice. So recursive means it's atomic, so it all happens instantaneously, and it will include any data sets you've made in that pool. So you can either decide to just do the pool and not the data sets, or the pool with the data sets, or just the data set. So you have your choice of what to snapshot. Then we get into clones. So snapshots themselves are read-only, so they're not designed for you to change. It's basically how ZFS tracks what the disk blocks look like at that point in time. If you actually want to use the data on those snapshots, you create something called a clone, and a clone is something that you can mount. So if I'm on a storage system, I can mount that clone. My Windows client can access the share where the mount is, grab the files they need, tell me it's done, and I remove the clone. So that's how we typically do it in storage. On a desktop system, it's more transparent than that. You don't even know that you're mounting stuff. It's just as you try to restore a file, it'll automatically mount it for you. So that's the ZFS terminology for how you get your stuff back. So let's see how we create a snapshot in FreeNAS. So we do have, under storage, we do have something called periodic snapshot tasks, where you can go in and turn them on. You select the volume or data set, and you can decide whether or not it's going to grab any data sets under that point. You set a lifetime, so it will actually prune them so you don't end up with, you know, 3 years worth of snapshots. So you decide how long you want to keep them. And with FreeNAS, because this is going to be storage, you can decide at what time of day to create snapshots. So it may make sense to do snapshots from 9 to 5 and then decide how often those occur. Is once an hour enough for my company to be able to restore to, or do I really need 5 minutes, 15 minutes once a day? You can also select the days of the week. So you may want to do 9 to 5 from Monday to Friday. PCBSD, we have a couple different ways to deal with snapshots. So PCBSD has a utility called Warden, which basically is a front end to FreeBSD's jail mechanism, which is a very lightweight way of provisioning virtualization. FreeBSD jails were originally designed to give you another FreeBSD operating system, so very lightweight virtualized version. In the last year or so, it's also possible to install Linux into a FreeBSD jail. Warden makes it very easy to go in and create jails. So this system has 3 jails. One's running Debian, one's running FreeBSD, one is for the ports collection. If I highlight a jail and go into the snapshots tab, I can check to schedule the snapshots, how often I want them to occur, how long I want to keep them, and I can go in and add a manual snapshot. If I'm going to, say, do an upgrade and I want a snapshot first, I can create a manual snapshot. Because this is more like a server system, I can actually mount a snapshot. It will create the clone for me. I can restore the system to that point in time, and if I've mounted a snapshot, I can unmount it. The thing that's really cool about this, if people who are worried about running ZFS on Linux, if I virtualize Linux on Warden, I still have ZFS underneath it, so I can still do things like snapshots. That we had in 9.1, that's still 9.2. One of the things that we're just finishing up for the 9.2 release is we've rewritten Life Preserver, which used to be our backup utility, and we've rewritten it to take advantage of snapshots. So you can go in and schedule when you would like your snapshots to occur, and it will do the entire pool for you. You can then set up your pruning schedule, how long you want to keep your snapshots. Either by the number of days or the number of snapshots. And one of the things that we just put in, so if we start talking about, well, how do I restore this stuff? So I have this nice snapshot schedule. I want to get a file back. We built in into the desktop basically a snapshot browser where you can go in and look at all your points in time and find the files within that data set. So I'm going to show a screenshot of that. And also, the snapshots will be stored locally, but you can also automate it to go out and to send those snapshots to another system. That other system could be a FreeNAS appliance, or it could be it'll be a FreeBSD or PCBSD system running the latest version of ZFS. And those go over SSH. And one of the cool things that we've added to the installer, if your local system goes up in smoke and you've just toasted the system, all you do is insert the installer and you say that you want to restore from your remote backup. And you pick which point in time you want to restore the system to. So we have a couple of snapshots of that. Let's see what we got here. So these are like really, really new, and I did it on a test system. So here I have a pool, it's called Tank 1. It's going to tell me the time that the latest snapshot was taken, and it's going to tell me how many snapshots I have available. So in this one, I just did a quick test for 2 snapshots. If I go into the snapshot tab, here are all the data sets in that pool. And what I cared about in this screenshot, well, what's in my home directory? You know, I've gone and screwed up a file there. So if I click here, it's going to show that you have 2 snapshots, 2 points in time. I can go back to whichever point in time, and it's basically going to show me like a Nautilus what USR Home Drew looks like. I can double-click the file that I need, and it automatically clones it, mounts it, and restores it for me. So very slick. And this is just the part of the installer. So the installer itself lets you do a desktop or a server. If I've mucked up the system, I just say restore. This will launch a wizard, which basically asks me what's the IP address of the system containing the backups. It will then connect to that system, show me all the points in time, and ask me which point in time I would like to restore to. And then it will restore the system. So who thinks that's cool? You might think that's cool? Yes?
When you make a snapshot and you push it over to the backup machine,
yes.
Are they incremental or differential, or is it the whole thing?
It's the difference from the last point in time to this point in time. Correct, yeah. So that's, snapshotting is really cool. Another thing that went into the design of ZFS is they wanted to design a self-healing file system. And there's a couple of ways that ZFS accomplishes that. So whenever you are saving data to disk, it is automatically, as it's writing to the disk blocks, it is creating checksums. And you can ask it to do something known as a scrub. And a scrub basically goes through every disk block, checks the checksum against the known value that ZFS thinks belongs in that disk block. If it finds that there's corruption in a disk block, the checksums don't match, this is where your copy on write comes in handy. It will actually go and see, can I find a non-corrupt version of this disk block? And if so, it will correct it for you. When you do a ZFS scrub, it keeps its statistics, and at the end it lets you know how many disk blocks it went through, how many checksums didn't match, and how many disk blocks it was able to correct. I have 10 minutes. Okay. The nice thing about this is it gives you an early indication if you have a disk that's starting to give you trouble. And one of the problems with hardware RAID is you could, for a period of time, silently write corrupt data before the controller decided to let you know there's a problem. And having backups of corrupt data isn't going to help you. So this one is actually designed to fix it. So what we recommend is that you schedule scrubs to occur. Scrubs are a little I/O intensive, so if you're doing this for a company, do it like on a Sunday afternoon when the system's not being heavily used. Because it will basically go through all your disk blocks. And we recommend if you're using commodity disks, do it once a week. If you have very good disks, once a month is usually sufficient. But it's something you should be doing regularly. And you do want to read your scrub results to see if it's finding corrupt data. This is something we don't have a scrub schedule in PCBSD yet. I assume that will be coming in the future. FreeNAS does so. And since the early 8 series, as soon as you make a volume, it automatically makes a scrub schedule for you because it's important enough that it thinks you should be doing that. You can't see it in this screenshot, but there's actually an alert button in the far right corner, and it will actually do an alert condition if it finds it found corrupt data during your scrub. This one, the default value is to do every 35 days to make sure it always lands on the same day of the week, so basically every 5 weeks, and by default it starts at midnight on Sunday. You can go in and change that to whatever value you want. We don't recommend that you turn off scrubs, because then basically you're losing a lot of good functionality for knowing about your disks. Okay, so scheduling scrubs. Just have a couple more slides here. Deduplication. Everybody was all excited when the version of ZFS that does deduplication came out, and then everybody started complaining that it killed their system. So deduplication is a very good thing for a very certain use case. So if you are storing a lot of duplicate data, typically this is going to be something like virtual images, where you have a lot of disk box containing the same data, deduplication can save you a lot of space. So basically in deduplication, what ZFS does is it goes through all of your disk blocks. It creates something in RAM called a dedupe table, and it's keeping track that this disk block with that checksum contains the same data as this disk block with that checksum contains the same data, and so on. And it actually creates a table. Once it's done all that, it consolidates it into one disk block, and it changes the checksum. That is not I/O intensive, that is RAM intensive. And if you don't have enough RAM, and the dedupe table gets bigger than your RAM, it will kill your system. It'll freeze it solid. So you don't do this on a system with a limited amount of RAM. You also don't do it on your whole pool. So a smart way of doing dedupe is to create a data set that contains data that is likely to be duplicate, to run the dedupe on that data set only, and to make sure you have at least 5 gigs of RAM for each terabyte of storage to be stored in that data set. Then you should be fine, and you can reap the benefits of deduplication. But you get a lot of people that say, well, this is a cool feature. Let's turn it on and see what happens. They see what happens. So the final thing, anybody who's used Solaris before has heard of this concept before, because it was in Solaris. You have something called boot environments. So this, again, is dealing with data sets and snapshotting. So you actually take a snapshot of the data set where the operating system lives. And this is something that's a good thing to do before you start mucking with the operating system. So if you're preparing to install new drivers or to perform an upgrade or to, you know, start doing library changes or something, before you do that, go in and create a boot environment. It takes half a second, and I'll show you the screen where you do it. As soon as you create a boot environment, that environment will be added to the grub menu, and it's basically a version of the operating system you can boot into if you want to. I have 5 minutes. So if you go in and you upgrade the operating system and it blows up and it's a terrible mess, reboot, go into the version before you did the upgrade. So it takes 30 seconds to do your reboot, and you're back to where you were. So very, very slick functionality. So in PCBSD, FreeNAS doesn't have this yet because your OS is actually separate from your data storage. It doesn't need it. But this is a wonderful thing to have on a desktop environment. So we have something called Boot Manager. It's really simple. You open it up, and you always have a boot environment. It's what you boot it into. I go in and I click the plus button right there before I do an upgrade. It takes all of half a second. I do my upgrade. If I don't like it, I reboot the system. It will automatically do everything for you, so it'll put it in your boot menu. So here is the default of what I installed, and I decided to create a boot environment that I called before upgrade. And all I have to do is select that in grub, and that's where I go back into it. Very slick. So that's it for the features. So I do have some additional resources in the slides. So all of this is documented. Some of the PCBSD stuff, we're still working on it because we're getting ready for release. But you can download the handbook from the website. FreeNAS has its own handbook. The ZFS Best Practices Guide is very good if you want to learn a bit more about design, smart design. And this is a very good video on how to become a ZFS ninja. And I'll put you on the last slide where it has the... Well, I was going to give you an easier URL. The slide that has the entire presentation, so you can go in and look at all the URLs. Yes. Okay. So I'll put the other one back for those that want to take a picture of this one. Okay. I think we have like 2 minutes for questions. Yes.
So CFS has some pretty aggressive memory requirements compared to regular file systems. So on PCDSD, do you like throw up a warning if the system has a low amount of memory or kernel tuning on the fly during installation? How do you handle that?
So the biggest complaint we get about CFS is, oh, it wants so much memory. And it's doing so much stuff, which is why it wants so much memory. Your memory requirements really depend upon what you're using the system for. So if I'm doing storage for an office of 30, consecutive users or, parallel users, I'm not going to put 2 gigs of RAM in the system. If I'm using a desktop, and especially if it's only a single user desktop, we have PCBSD users who are happily using 1 gig of RAM. Now, we haven't told them how to dedupe. We wouldn't want them to dedupe. We don't have scrubs yet, so when we start doing scrubs, we may have to put up the RAM requirement a bit, but it really depends upon what you're doing with the system. And it also depends upon what is your definition of performance. If you don't mind that things are a little slow, because you know this is an older motherboard anyways, and I'm used to things being slow, you probably wouldn't notice. So it really depends what you're using the system for. Yes?
Do snapshots ever become larger than the original file? So because it's a change set, does it keep track of the current state, or is it continuously changing so it might have duplicate information of the same block changing?
It's going to depend how often you take your snapshots. Where users get into trouble is it's like any other file system. You don't want to start running out of space. So, for example, UFS will automatically not let you make stuff after 85%. With ZFS, once you start getting at 80% disk capacity, things start to slow down. And depending upon the properties that you have set on the data set, because there's different types of reservations, you may hit a point where you can't make snapshots anymore. What really scares people is they start to delete things and they don't get any disk space back. What you have to start deleting is the snapshots, because it will happily recreate that file someplace else for you if you go to delete it.
Right, but let's say you put more information in the same block or whatever and then delete it.
It won't let you do that.
Okay.
It will never write to the same block.
Okay.
Yep. So it's copy on write. And I'm quite sure I've run out of the time allotted, so thank you. Yep.